Welcome to Respiro. We are an organization that is committed to teaching and training people to do life well. We want to guide people on their journey of transformation into better relationships, to knowing yourself, and to overcoming life's challenges. I'm Joe Bishop, and I'll be your guide as we delve deep into this difficult and complicated and increasingly widespread issue of anxiety. And I want to draw on ancient wisdom and modern brain science and my decades of experience of working with people as a counselor and guide around anxiety. And I want to say from the very beginning that I believe that anxiety can be beaten. That doesn't mean that you'll ever be completely free of it. You don't really want to be. Because we're all going to experience some forms of anxiety that are normal and natural and even healthy. But anxiety does not have to be debilitating. It does not have to consume your life. It does not have to suck the energy and life out of your soul. But that's what it does for many people. And we want to talk in this course about how to deal with anxiety in healthy ways. And in this lesson, we're primarily going to be talking about just understanding the issue, understanding anxiety. How big is this problem? What is it? When we say anxiety, what are we really talking about? What is causing all this anxiety in so many people in our world today? And what are the sources of it? There are going to be four lessons altogether in this course. You can listen to it and do this however you want to. You can binge listen. But I want to suggest that you will get the most out of this course if you listen to each lesson all the way through once or even twice, and then work through some of the questions and ideas we have given you for personal reflection and application in the PDFs provided, and that you take your time. You don't rush through this course. I also suggest that maybe you find somebody else to process this information with, that you find a partner to just talk about what you're learning and what you're learning about yourself and what's going on in your own mind and in your own soul around the issue of anxiety. We hope that when you've completed this course, you will have a deeper understanding of what's going on in your soul, and that you will have gotten some encouragement and hope and wisdom and some practical ways to handle anxiety in healthier ways. We're going to give you a lot of information because beating anxiety starts with knowledge, but our goal is not just information, but transformation. That this leads to permanent, substantial, healthy change for you. That's what this course is all about. Everybody has their own story and experience around dealing with anxiety because nobody is completely exempt from it. My own story starts with the reality that when I was a kid, when I was a young boy, I was what people would call high-strung or nervous. I would wring my hands. I had a hard time controlling my bladder when I was a boy, before my Little League baseball game or having to play a trumpet solo for fifth grade band. Especially in those elementary age years, I would experience a lot of anxiety and just nervousness that came out in physical ways. And my parents, who did so many things well, so many things right, in this particular case, weren't very helpful because sometimes they would just kind of tell me to stop, cut that out, or stop acting goony. That was a word that I heard quite a few times. That's not a particularly encouraging word. This was before there was a movie called Goonies, and it had a whole different connotation. But back then, it just meant weird or strange or odd. I also would hear that word or hear that you're like your uncle who's odd. So I learned at an early age, as many people do, that you better not show the signs of what you're really feeling. You better somehow learn some strategies for keeping those emotions and those fears inside, or you'll be labeled and you'll have experiences with people that don't feel very good. that changed for me as time went on, partly just as my body changed and I went through puberty and things settled down for me and I didn't feel the nervousness and the anxiety as much in a general everyday sense, at least. And it's not been one of my major struggles in life, but it is, of course, for many, many people. And what I have seen in my practice as a counselor is a dramatic upturn in the number of people who want to talk about their struggle with anxiety. Prior to 2006, this was not the case, at least in my experience as a counselor. It was not a frequent occurrence that people wanted to talk about anxiety. That was not the presenting problem. In other words, the issue that people were coming to talk about. They would mention that anxiety was part of their life, or at least occasionally I would hear that, but it was not the thing that they were struggling with the most. It was not the thing that they wanted to talk about. I took a break from a regular counseling practice for a few years between 2006 and 2010. And then in 2010, I founded Respero, a nonprofit organization through which I do my personal counseling practice. And I immediately began to notice a difference. Within the first year, I heard stories about a young woman, for example, in her late 20s, who had experienced a panic attack driving over Highway 17, which is a road between Santa Cruz, where I live, and San Jose, California. And it goes over a small mountain range, and it's a four-lane highway, very twisty and curvy, so it creates some anxiety just normally driving over it. But she experienced a panic attack, shortness of breath, even hyperventilating, felt like she was going to have a heart attack. And it's not a road where there are many places to pull over, so that made it worse. And she was describing this to me and some subsequent panic attacks, and that's what she wanted to talk about in counseling. I had another client who came as a middle-aged man working at a high-tech firm in Silicon Valley, and he was in a management position there, and he was having panic attacks and really didn't understand why. Also, a young mom in her early 30s who was having extreme anxiety to a point where it was debilitating and consuming her life on a daily basis and all of her emotional energy. Or another middle-aged man who was so anxious that he simply could not function in his daily life. Another young woman in her 20s who could no longer go into any setting where there was a group of people, could no longer walk into church and sit down and experience being part of a congregation at church because of social anxiety. And these are just a few of the instances that I was hearing about. Now, I want to take those case studies and come back to them later in our course and kind of walk through what was going on with them, what was causing the anxiety. But my point right now is that I was beginning to hear more and more people struggling with anxiety in a way that was truly, truly affecting their life in a very negative way. And it's not just me, but this has been what's happened in therapy offices, in college mental health centers across our country, and in some ways throughout the world. But of course, my experience is here in America, primarily for the last 25 years in California, where I live, that anxiety is now a flood. As a matter of fact, anxiety is now the number one mental health issue in America. It is now the number one emotional problem of our day. Archibald Hart, a well-known author and psychologist, has written that panic anxiety is the number one mental health problem for women, and it is second for men. Why is it growing so much? Why is it now the number one issue? Is it because the younger generation is more likely to be willing to talk about their anxiety? Is it a good thing in the sense that there's not as much stigma attached to it, and they're more likely to report and seek help when they're struggling with anxiety? Or is it that life is truly more stressful in our day and age? and that we are experiencing life in such a way that it's causing more anxiety for people of all ages. And therefore, that's why there's such an increase in people seeking help with anxiety. It's probably both, because we're living in an increasingly stressful world. So let's just talk for a second about how big the problem really is. What are the sheer numbers? Well, in America, 40 million adults over the age of 18 are being diagnosed with an anxiety disorder every year in order to receive medication, in order to receive professional help. That's about 18%, slightly less than one out of every five adult Americans have anxiety that can be diagnosed. And the numbers are actually considerably more than that, we believe, because many people are experiencing it but not seeking help, not reporting it, especially older adults who might still feel like it would be a sign of weakness or there would be some stigma attached to it to admit their struggles and to seek help. So more than 40 million Americans, adult Americans a year. Between 25 and 30% of people will have the experience in their lifetime of anxiety to a pretty high degree. And it's not just adults, of course. Anxiety disorders affect 25% of children between 13 and 18 years old. And research is showing that people who have this anxiety disorder, children, teenagers who are struggling with anxiety, are at a higher risk to perform poorly in school, miss out on important social experiences, and engage in substance abuse. So anxiety, especially when it's untreated, has many hidden but profound effects. So the problem is big, and so are the implications. People are missing work. People are struggling to perform well in their jobs because of anxiety. So they're losing financial gain. Employers have a financial burden because their employees are struggling. There's just so many implications of the way that anxiety affects people's lives, academic, job performance, but most importantly, it is robbing people of the life for which they were created. Anxiety is hindering people from being who they were created to be and experiencing the life for which they were created. And that's why it's worth talking about. That's why it's worth dealing with. We believe anxiety can be beaten. So what is anxiety? What are we really talking about? Well, everybody's going to face a variety of challenges in their life. And feeling worried, stressed, anxious about those challenges is normal, sometimes even healthy. You've been to the doctor and you're waiting on test results. Your teenager was supposed to be home by 11 and it's 1:30 in the morning and they're not home and you don't know where they're at. You're going to be anxious. You're stuck in traffic on your way to the airport to catch a flight. You're going to have those times when you feel anxious about the immediate circumstance. You have a job review coming up. You have a presentation to make. You're going on a first date. You've been called into the boss's office and you don't know why. Feeling worried is very normal and inevitable. But as we've said, for nearly 20% of the population, every day is filled with worry that goes beyond normal. Feelings of physical and emotional nervousness that seem to be triggered for no reason at all. And this is the anxiety that we really want to talk about. It comes in many different shapes and forms. There's anxiety that's physical, anxiety that's emotional, anxiety that's mental, anxiety that has components of all three at once, anxiety caused by traumatic events, or anxiety caused by seemingly nothing at all. I appreciate the way one woman describes her experience with anxiety. She has said that my anxiety experience has primarily been with something called generalized anxiety disorder. I always liked that the acronym for that was GAD. This is characterized by persistent, excessive, unrealistic worry about everyday things. I have a vague, general sense of dread that is with me almost always, but gets worse at times when the fault lines of my life are shifting around me. I have come to think of having anxiety as living at the intersection of uncertainty and powerlessness. I feel afraid of what the future holds, and I feel unable to do anything about it. It's not just bad change that makes me feel anxious. Just about 7 years ago, I got married, and it was one of the best times of my life. I was happy and in love, and I was terrified. I didn't know what this new phase of life held for me. I didn't know what rhythms would unfold, and being at the beginning of such a significant new time made me scared, and that made me feel like there was something wrong with me. End quote. That's actually from a sermon delivered by a woman, Laura Turner, who also has a blog where she writes a lot about anxiety, and we'll give you the link to that blog. It's worth checking out. And many of you listening will know exactly what she's talking about. So many of you have struggled with anxiety like that over the years. And one of the most important things you need to know is you are not alone. There are so many people struggling with this. So the persistent, generalized kind of anxiety that has the official diagnosis of generalized anxiety disorder has physiological symptoms, and we've actually given you a list. They include feeling weak all over, or your heart racing, rapid pounding heartbeat or palpitations, hyperventilating, feeling a shortness of breath, things like chronic fatigue or dizziness or sweating. Those are some of the physical symptoms of anxiety. There are mental, cognitive symptoms, like thinking, I can't carry on, I've got to get out of here, what if I make a fool of myself, people are looking at me all the time, I'm going to faint, I'm going crazy, I'm having a heart attack, I can't go outside of my house, I'll lose control. A lot of mental symptoms and thoughts spinning in people's heads. And then there are emotional symptoms, just tremendous fear. Fear that something terrible is going to happen, an uneasiness, a loneliness, feeling embarrassed or rejected, feeling like you want to scream with anger. So those are some of the symptoms of even just generalized anxiety disorder. Psychologists use the term anxiety as an umbrella, really, for many different kinds of fear. So there are specialized kinds of anxiety, like obsessive-compulsive disorder, or phobias about specific situations or specific items, panic attack or panic disorders, of course, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a form of anxiety. So those are some of the specialized kinds of anxiety. What is causing all this anxiety? What is underneath it? What is happening? And in a word, the answer to that is stress. Capital S, capital T, capital R, capital E, capital S, S, stress. Anxiety is rooted in stress. So I want to talk about what are the sources of stress in our world, in our lives. And first, I want to talk about what stress does in our body and in our brain, and the connection between stress and anxiety. So what is the neurological impact of stress? John Medina has written a book called Brain Rules that I think is one of the most helpful tools that we have for good information on this subject that's clear but pretty comprehensive as well. And he writes about when you have stress, you can feel your body responding to it. Your pulse races, your blood pressure rises, and you feel a massive release of energy. That is the famous hormone adrenaline at work. It's spurred into action by your brain's hypothalamus, which is a pea-sized organ sitting almost in the middle of your head. When your sensory symptoms detect stress, the hypothalamus reacts by sending a signal to your adrenal glands, which are down on top of your kidneys. These glands immediately dump bucket loads of adrenaline into your bloodstream, and that overall effect is called the flight or fight response. But there's a less famous hormone at work too that's also released by your adrenal glands, and it's just as powerful as adrenaline, and it's called cortisol. It's kind of the second wave of our defensive reaction to stressors. And in small doses, it wipes out most of the unpleasant aspects of stress, and it returns us to normalcy. That's the end of the quote from John Medina in his book, Brain Rules. And he goes on to do a good job of explaining how our bodies are brilliantly designed to release these chemicals when we're in danger. And we want to have a flood of adrenaline and then a secondary release of cortisol when we're standing on a train track, so to speak, and the train is coming. When there is danger, physical danger, emotional danger, our bodies are designed to release these chemicals that then give us the extra strength and the extra ability to focus so that we can respond to the danger and get out of the danger. What happens, though, is that in our world, because of so much stress happening all the time, cortisol especially is now being released as a slow drip throughout the day instead of as a burst that is temporary and immediate and then stops when we're out of the danger. The stress that we are undergoing means that the cortisol is being released as a slow drip, like a leaky faucet. And what happens as it builds up then in our brain is that it blocks the good hormones, the happy messengers, to use a highly scientific term, in our brain. Things like dopamine and serotonin and norepinephrine that make us feel calm, that make us feel happy, that make us feel peaceful. Cortisol is designed to block those so that we can get out of danger. When the train is coming, you know, it's not necessarily helpful to be feeling really peaceful and relaxed. You want to get out of the danger. But when it's happening all the time and the cortisol is being released, we don't get to experience what these good hormones do in our brains. So in many ways, neurologically, anxiety is the absence of something more than it is the presence of something. But if you want to simplify it and understand it in a neurobiological sense, there's too much cortisol that's preventing the good hormones from connecting in your brain. And as that happens over time, and as that happens on a daily basis throughout the day, you feel anxious. Now, what are the sources of stress then in our daily lives? There are many, many external sources of stress that life just brings our way. Upcoming events that we anticipate are going to be difficult or are not going to go well are a common source of anxiety and stress in our lives. I've already listed some of those, like the big presentation or a difficult conversation that you don't want to have and you're trying to avoid. Having to live in an ongoing environment that is not positive emotionally is also a huge external source of stress. Being in a toxic emotional environment at work or at home is one of the worst things for our bodies, our emotions, and it's a profound source of anxiety when you have to go to work and endure being just in a place that's toxic emotionally, where there's a lot of criticism, where there's a lot of pressure. Or think about being in a relationship, in a marriage, in a home, situations where you're growing up living where one of your parents is an addict and they have radical mood changes, or your parents aren't getting along, or you're not getting along with your spouse, or you're fighting with your children as they grow older. Toxic emotional environments are a huge external source of stress in our lives. And then there's just the pace of life. This is a huge factor in why there's so much anxiety. We are living life with such a rapid pace, trying to do too many things and having to spend a lot of time in the car in tense driving situations or running from place to place to place on a daily basis to get everything done. The pace of life is causing a great deal of stress in our world today. There's simply no doubt about it. And another thing that brings to bear on this is when people are undergoing major changes in their life, when they move, when they get a new job, when they lose their job, when they have a baby for the first time or a new baby, having to cope with enormous change like that, when there's illness, when there's death of a loved one, getting married, going through a breakup, all those kind of major changes in your life are stressful and produce anxiety. But a lot of the stress comes from how we think about all these external sources and external changes and factors, how we interpret and think about these events in our life, how we react to them internally is what creates a great deal of the stress, actually. So when I talk about internal sources of stress, I'm talking about things like beliefs that we hold about what make us important, what make us secure, beliefs about ourselves, about what will satisfy our deepest desires and the longings of our soul, our beliefs about how to find life, what make us matter, what will get us love. And we hold a lot of wrong beliefs about those kind of things. And then we interpret the events that are happening to us through this filter of wrong beliefs and misplaced ideas about ourself, and then that just doubles down on the stress, and then that creates more and more anxiety because we're under stress and our body reacts to that stress and we feel anxious. So wrong beliefs about life and our identity and security are a big factor here. And we're going to talk a great deal more about that, of course, as we proceed with our lessons. Another internal source of stress is just that we have fears about the future. Anxiety is very much about the future. The fear that if something happens, fill in the blank, if X happens, I won't be able to handle it, or it will destroy me, or it will mean that I'll never get the job or the relationship or the life that I want. I'm going to miss out. I'm not going to be able to handle it. Anxiety is about fear of the future, based on our wrong beliefs. And it often entails a scarcity mentality. What I mean by this phrase, scarcity mentality, is when we see the world through the lens, through the filter of there is not enough, especially when we see ourselves that way, when we believe that we are not enough. Lynn Twist is an author who has written about this, and I just want to read a quote from her. She writes, "For me, and for many of us, our first waking thought of the day is, I didn't get enough sleep. The next one is, I don't have enough time. Whether true or not, that thought of not enough occurs to us automatically before we even think to question or examine it. We spend most of the hours and the days of our lives hearing, explaining, complaining, or worrying about what we don't have enough of. We don't have enough time. We don't have enough rest. We don't have enough exercise. We don't have enough work. We don't have enough profits. We don't have enough power. We don't have enough nature. We don't have enough weekends. Of course, we don't have enough money, ever. We're not thin enough. We're not smart enough. We're not pretty enough or fit enough or educated or successful enough or rich enough, ever. Before we even sit up in bed, before our feet touch the floor, we're already inadequate, already behind, already losing, already lacking something. And by the time we go to bed at night, our minds race with a litany of what we didn't get or didn't get done that day. We go to sleep burdened by those thoughts and wake up the next morning all over again to that reverie of lack." End quote. She is describing the reality for many people. And when we see ourselves as not enough, and when we see the world as a place where there is not enough, the world and our lives become a place of stress, of much greater stress, and then that leads to anxiety. And then also, many people are locked into just deeply unhelpful patterns of thought. Negative assumptions, their mind gets spinning and stuck in ruts of particular ways of thinking and reacting. And we're going to list those in a future lesson. We're going to talk a great deal more about that and how to get out of those unhelpful patterns, how to change those and replace those with healthier patterns. But all these ways of thinking create a great deal of stress. Anxiety is a product of the way our body reacts to stress. Life brings us a lot of external sources of stress, and then we have a lot of internal ways of thinking about ourselves and about life that greatly increase the stress that make us anxious. One way to think about this is that underneath anxiety is fear of the future based on a belief of not enough. So that's the crucial information that we start with to understand anxiety. We've given you a picture of what's going on with anxiety in our world and why there's so much stress that's producing the anxiety. And we are going to proceed in the next few lessons in talking about what is the ancient wisdom, particularly of Jesus and his followers, his immediate followers. What do they have to say about this? And my perspective is that Jesus was the most brilliant person who ever lived, and that he has the best information available about reality and about life and about ourselves and our struggles. So we're going to look at what he has to say about worry and then what some of his followers had to say about it, because there is so much wisdom to be gained that is still relevant to us today. And then in the third and fourth lessons, we are going to look at what helps the most. What are the kinds of treatments, changes, practices that are the most effective in healing and changing our anxiety, the way we experience anxiety? I want to leave you with one thought, one idea for you to be thinking about and applying to your life. We have given you questions for reflection to get you started thinking about your own experience, how this applies to you, what are your fears. But the one thought that I want to leave you with is this: ruthlessly eliminate hurry. That's a quote from an author named Dallas Willard, who's one of my favorite authors because he has so many wise things to say about life. And this is one of my favorites. Ruthlessly eliminate hurry. That sounds impossible, doesn't it? And yet, that will be one of the keys to reducing stress and living a sane, healthy, non-anxious life, because it is possible. It is possible to be a non-anxious person. We believe that, and that's where we're heading.